hang in there. It is. Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume. He is Smiley Kaufman. And today we have a little bit of a unique episode. It's a two-parter. You're either watching this right now on our YouTube channel. Thank you for liking and subscribing, of course. Make sure you go do that if you're not. And you're going to get 15 minutes of a conversation that Smiley had, a longer conversation that Smiley had with Brandel Chamblee. Brandel, of course, is a Golf Channel analyst, a former tour pro, winner on tour. A lot of people know and love him from that Live From show on Golf Channel that's so fantastic at major events. But the first part of this episode is a conversation Smiley had with Brandel about a golf trip in Scotland. Brandel's over there preparing for the Open Championship, talking a little bit about that. And here is, I think, the best way to tee this up, Smiley, is we talked to our viewers, our audience, the last episode about the Dream Ireland Golf Getaway Sweepstakes by Shipsticks. And I'm back. I'm armed with better details. I can run through the full thing for you. We can get some reaction. All right. Three lucky winners will receive an all-expenses-paid trip for two to the island of Ireland, where they'll play six world-class courses, including Royal Portrush, host of the 2025 Open Championship. We'll put the link to the sweepstakes in the podcast and the YouTube. Here are the dates. October 8th through 15th, 2025, this year, three grand prize winners, and you get a plus one. You're going to play Royal Portrush, Portmarnock, Royal County Down, Castle Rock, Ballyliffin, and Port Stewart. And the deadline to enter, July 16th by midnight.
So you're telling me I have 8 days to convince Fran that just because we're having a baby on October 8th doesn't mean I can't make the other part of the trip?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could definitely look into an earlier late C-section, maybe. You just ask Fran to hold on as long as she can, because you're going to want to be over in Ireland that week. That's a pretty good lineup right there.
Oh my gosh, that's a heck of a deal. Go sign up, 8 days to do it, and send pictures to me because I'll be changing diapers and wishing I was actually not. I can't say that. Wishing I was there, but in spirit, I wish I was there.
Living vicariously through the viewers, the listeners of the show, as they hopefully win that sweepstakes by Shipsticks. So go check out that link, and that tees up the conversation you're having with Brandel here, Smiley. Give us a little tease here, like, of this Scotland course section. I know we talked about my Scotland trip that last summer and then yours at Ireland. What was the course that intrigued you the most you want to kind of tease for the audience to pay attention to?
It's Macrahenish, I think is how it's pronounced. Wow. And we talked a lot about that. And that was one of the places he had just gotten back from. So he tells a lot of stories about this golf course and just the history of this place. That was really fun to learn about a course that I had to Google before him and I got on. So that was fun to talk about. And then St. Andrews, of course, it's a fun conversation. So that was the two main courses that we talked about. Of course, you could go on and on and on, but about plenty of others. But Turnberry was also another one that we talked about because that's where you stand. So great conversation. That first part, of course, was a great way to kind of lead in to, of course, it being Open Championship week next week.
Yeah, I mean, we will, on the back end of this conversation, this excerpt of the conversation, tell you a little bit more about what to expect on the show the next couple of days. But right now we're focusing on Scottish golf. I mean, look at me. I'm decked out. I'm all North Berwick.
I West saw Linked that.
Out. You like that? Like a little synergy? Yeah. Do you see the Jake Knapp video?
No.
Just an all-timer golf aesthetic video of Jake teeing off at North Berwick with a rainbow in the backdrop and just classic – now I've got to see tempo. That. I'm like, yeah, let me just make this my screensaver on my phone or something. It just was so soothing.
Every year, there's an account that always posts Jordan and JT doing their work at the Barrett screen at 16 at North Berwick. And every single time I watch the whole thing thinking that, oh, one of these times they're going to include me in one of these clips. And every time I'm just a shadow in all these videos. I'm like, oh, I know I was there. Like, I remember all these things, and maybe it's my video. I don't know. Maybe I need to ask for royalties on this stuff.
Did you see Iona Stevens up and down from the beach at Pitt?
Oh, in North Berwick? Come on.
How good is that?
Incredible. Incredible.
Like really, really good. I don't know how she hit it over on the beach, but it was a heck of an up and down from there.
The beach is left, so I wouldn't understand that. But if it was right, I would understand.
Yeah, when you're playing out of North Berwick, a hayak can find a beach there.
100%.
Just getting you all in the mood for a little Scottish golf talk. So we'll filibuster
before you get there. I've always noticed this about logos in Scotland or Ireland. They're way different. Mm, that makes sense. Yes. They're less simple.
They're like a coat of arms. Like, look at that.
Yeah, and maybe North Berwick's there just seem to be bigger logos than the ones that we have over here. It seems like very much more simple over here, I would say, with logos, kind of, whether it's a tree or whether it's this. It seems like the crest of the community almost is what these country club logos over there, I guess not country clubs, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, like the links courses that have been there forever. I think we suffer a little bit from the era of streamlined graphic design, you know, people taking old logos and needing to kind of clean up the lines and make them modern and make them, you know, brandable and sellable. Whereas, you know, as you can see on this ad, North Berwick was founded in 1832. And this probably was some local coat of arms was adapted to represent the West Links. Here's a good look at this little live example. So here's a newer Scottish course, King's Barnes, and that does look more American in style.
Very American in style.
So I think it depends on time when it's developed. And also, like, if you're North Berwick, you know, are you really going to have a graphic designer come in and reformat this? Like, it's a piece of history. It's a piece of time. You can't change something like this.
It feels like it almost represents the community, too. Like yeah. It's so representative of that. Just when you see a logo like that, it's almost like their own crest.
Yeah. I mean, and look at us. I almost did it again, Smiley. I almost commandeered yet another podcast episode to talk about my love for North Berwick, which you and I both share. It's a great, great place.
It's incredible. Incredible. It's
one of the best. Hope to go back. Maybe a little live show from that that little bar downstairs where we did our one and done picks last year. That would be delightful.
Yeah. You did that, didn't you?
I did. Made the one and done picks there. That was when we were on a hot streak last year. I think that was around John Deere, you know, Rocket time. We the getting was good back then.
Yeah, we were definitely hot last year. This year we've been more on the haggis side when it comes to.
We're working on it. I think I'm going to make it to East Lake. So that's the biggest thing. That was the biggest key. Let's get you to more golf talk in Scotland. Brandel Chamblee, Smiley Kaufman. Enjoy about 12 to 15 minutes of this. We'll talk to you on the other side.
All right, guys. Welcome back. We have another great guest here on the Smiley Show with Brandel Chamblee, colleague of mine at NBC Sports and Golf Channel. And Brandel, you're not in America. You are already over in Scotland. Of course, we got the Open Championship coming out. This episode will be released Open Championship week. So you're already got the vibes going for us, Brandel. So tell us what you're doing over there so early.
Well, this is about the fourth or fifth year that my wife and I have come over early for the Open. We can't wait for the Open. And it's 110 degrees where we live in Scottsdale. So we always come over here early and just play links golf. You know, the temperature is 55, 60 degrees. We love it. And, you know, this year we've played, let's see, we got to Edinburgh, hung there for a day or so. Then we went and played St. Andrews. Then we drove to Macrahanish, which I had never played, but had read about for years. Obviously, it was one of the golf courses that Tom Doak wrote so favorably about. So it sort of piqued my interest. So I drove down there. And we played there, and we just literally got to Turnberry. So driving from St. Andrews to Macrahanish, don't you let anybody tell you the toughest drive in golf is the 18th at Carnoustie. It is not. It is the drive from anywhere to Macrahanish.
We're talking about in a motor vehicle, huh? How long did it take you?
So I don't know if you're a Beatles fan, but you know that song, Long and Windy Road?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Long and Windy Road is the road. That song is written about the road from, I don't know where the heck they started from, but down to Macrahanish. It's about 2 hours, and the speed limit is 60. And literally the speed limit should be 30 because it twists and turns and goes over hills and around corners. And through forest, and maybe one car could fit comfortably on the road, but it's meant for two-way traffic. And everybody's coming at you 60 miles
and you're driving
an hour
on the other side of the road, yeah, so and you're on the left side. So there's all these things you're just not used to. I actually drove the year before from the Scottish Open at the Renaissance all the way to Liverpool. And it's maybe not quite as bad as what you're talking about, but there were moments where I'm like, this is it. I'm 10 and 2 gripping the steering wheel like I'm hitting a driver off the 18th tee at Sawgrass. it's just holding on tight.
I'm going to tell you, I've made the drive that you just described. That is the 18th tee at St. Andrews compared to what I just
did. Oh, man. All right.
It was the most nerve-wracking down there and back experience. Like, my wife, the whole way, because it's beautiful. It's unbelievable. There's waterfalls and there's locks and inlets and streams and forests and green-covered mountains. The whole way, my wife's like, oh, my God, that's incredible. And I'm like, take a picture of it. I'll see it when we get there. But you don't dare take your eyes off the road. You just don't dare. So I'm quite happy to have made it safely to Turnberry, where we're playing tomorrow.
What'd you like about the course, though?
Macrahanish?
Yes.
So if you read, you know, what Tom Doak, and, you know, I mean, he's obviously one of the most foremost authorities on architecture. I mean, he goes on and on and on about the routing. I can't even imagine. It was designed by old Tom Morris in the mid-1870s. So I don't even know how he built this golf course on all these dunes. But the first hole is considered the best first hole in the world of golf.
That's what Jack Nicklaus said on the website. I was going to ask you about the first hole.
It's an incredible
what's cool about it?
Yeah. It's you have to cut across the ocean to get to the fairway. And the fairway sets at, like, say, I don't know, 4 o'clock to 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. The fairway sits at a diagonal to you. So you've got to carry the ocean and then shape it right to left to find the fairway. Otherwise, you end up in the hay.
Is the wind off the left, Randall? Tell me the wind wasn't off the left.
The wind was off the left, hard.
Oh, God.
Hard off the left.
This is my nightmare. This is literally what's in my nightmares.
Yeah, so I'm on the first tee, and, you know, everybody wants to come out and take pictures. And, you know, the lady from Macrahanish, she wants to do a picture for social media. And I'm over here for sort of, you know, hits and giggles. But I'm on that tee and I'm like, God, I do not need all this attention. I don't need photographs. I don't need, you know, levity here.
You're just trying to go.
I just don't want to hit a big flaming fade slice out to the right and have 3 wood back into this green. And I haven't, there's no warm up. You know, they don't do ranges over here. They just don't do them. They do a lot of things well over here, but they don't do ranges well. So it's your first shot of the day. So I had a rather weak fade that somehow ended up in the fairway. Thank goodness. Everybody thought it was a great shot, but if I'd have been at home by myself, I might have thrown my driver. But I found the fairway. I had 6 iron in, and I had this local caddy who just told me about every dangerous thing up by the green. You know, it was kind of blind. No. But anyway, I sort of half whiffed a 6 iron up about 30 feet away and almost made birdie. So I was pretty happy with that. But anyway, it was blowing 30, 40 miles an hour. We got in last night. My wife was like, you know, Scottish golf just beats you up. It's beautiful and it's fun. But the elements, because we played St. Andrews the day before and it blew 40. It was 40 the day before. So we've had a marvelous time over here. Don't get me wrong. We'd love it. And we were going to play today when we got here, but the wind is blowing about 40 here and it's cold. And my wife is like, can we just have a day off from the elements?
Oh, gosh.
So anyway.
I feel that in my bones, too. I feel that.
Like, you would not have liked that first tee shot.
No, I would not have. I'm like just starting to get comfortable turning the ball over again. I had like a year where I literally couldn't hit anything other than the heel or close to the middle of the face. Nothing even close to the toe. So if I did hit it right to left, it was an accident.
There's zero chance I was going to try to hit a draw off that tee, like, you know, hold it against the wind. I was like, I don't care. The wind was coming 40 off the left and it pushes you towards the ball. So you're automatically going to come over it and heave at it. And I was like, no, I don't care that, you know, cause I told my caddy the line I was going to take and he looked horrified at me. He was like, that's like a 260 carry. And, you know, I'm like all puffed up because I've been working on my swing speed. I'm like, sure. I got 260, no problem. But I looked at his face and I was like, oh, I guess I don't want to offend anybody here. Uh-huh. I will take the 220 carry.
Hey, I like it. You're going to still work on the swing speed. You got to. And I mean, St. Andrews is interesting, too, because you said you just played there. And of course, if you recall back to the Open Championship that last had it there, it was 20 under par. So winning that golf tournament with Cam Smith winning. And just interesting, too, Brandel, because, you know, I know you're such a big fan of course architecture and just the overall strategy in the game. And if you don't have those 40-mile-an-hour winds, you don't have the firm fairways or some roughs, something to challenge the top players in the world, St. Andrews isn't the same test that it was in past, you know, decades of playing out there.
No, it's not, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to disparage St. Andrews. It's the most historic and most beautiful, and you feel like you're doing something extraordinary anytime you play there, and it's charming beyond compare. But if you just stumbled upon any golf course with the holes, let's say 1, 6, 9, 10, 12, I can't decide if it's the worst hole I've ever played in my life or it's one of the better holes I've ever played in my life. I just cannot decide. Okay? But if you, anyway, nonetheless, if you stumbled upon 1, 6, 9, 10, 12, and 18 on any other golf course, you would go, what are these holes? They're 350 yards of grass. Now, there are some extraordinary holes in between those. But the charm of going out, I liken the first hole at St. Andrews to your mother just patting you on the butt as you're mm-hmm. going off to school as a 7-year-old, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And 18, your mom just wrapping her arms around you coming off the bus. You know, they're just such sweet out and in holes. And, you know, we had the local caddies that I've had this same caddy that caddied for me in the 95 Open. He caddied for me in the 2018 Senior Open there. He's caddied for me every single time I've gone to St. Andrews. So I had him, and he's an old friend and a great guy. And for the first time ever, I played with a Royal and Ancient member, a woman by the name of Elaine Radcliffe. And then, which, by the way, was a bizarre dynamic. And her ex-husband played in our group. And they're like best friends. They were married, got divorced, and now they're friends. Like great friends. So we played with them, with the caddies, and had a blast. And then we got to go in and do the full lunch, drinks. Sure. In the Royal and Ancient. So it was a spectacular day. The only bad part about it was I had planned on leaving by like 2:30 to drive to Macrahenish. Well, we were having so much fun. We didn't even leave till almost 6.
Oh, boy. That's a tough drive at night. Well, I guess it gets dark at 10:30, 11.
It doesn't, but still, it was such a long day. By the time I got into Macrahenish, I was whimpering for sure. I was on my last legs by the time I got there.
So, do you get worried at all about St. Andrews just being able to defend itself against the world's best players now with power? You just played in 40-mile-an-hour winds. It's not exactly what these players might face the next Open there. But
for sure. I mean, I'm 62. I started to say I'm 62. I turned 63 the day I was playing there. So, the day after I turned 63. And I drove it 3 feet from the front of the green at 18 and then two putted for birdie. And so, yes, I mean, the golf course, I mean, and Paul McGinley and I have this debate back and forth. I don't know where you fall on this, Smiley. To me, it's like the only way, if you really want to make a difference between what's going on in the world of professional golf and everywhere else, you'd have to bifurcate the rules. That's it. You'd have to, if you really wanted to rein the ball back, you'd have to rein it back 30, 40 yards. I don't believe that this rollback that's going to come about here in the next few years is going to make that big a difference, because guys are coming out of college now and they're swinging 130, 135 miles an hour. And so to protect these designs, you'd have to bifurcate the rules. You'd have to have one set of rules for equipment for the pros and the rest for the rest of us. And that's it. And that's such a difficult thing to do. It's a very difficult subject to get your arms around and get through all the litigation and the pushback from everybody in the game.
Hope you enjoyed Smiley's, the excerpt of Smiley's conversation, I should say, with Brandel Chamblee on Scottish golf. And the rest of that conversation is going to air on Monday, along with our recap of the Scottish Open. As Scott, as Brandel and Smiley, I almost called you Scotty. That'd be pretty cool. We have Scotty on the show as well. We need to make that happen. But Brandel and Smiley, rather, are going to be previewing the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. A really, really cool conversation, among other things. Also, you two sharing stories of playing career and all sorts of good stuff there. So stay tuned for that. The rest of that episode will be on Monday. Now, this is functioning as both a tease if you're watching on YouTube or a bridge if you're listening on podcast to the next piece of content, which is a really cool video with Stephen Sweeney that we're really excited about, digging into analyzing the putting stroke and all the information that you can get in a high-end studio, what the pros use. And to do that, Smiley, we're going to tee it up. Stephen Sweeney, one of our favorite trust-based relationships. Our friends at Ahead build and manage digital platforms that power the most successful organizations in the world. Their consultative approach, unmatched engineering, and innovative solutions combine to accelerate the impact of technology in every client they serve. Ahead's longstanding relationships are built on outcomes and experience with both their clients and technology partners. You can learn more at ahead.com. That's a pretty appropriate TF, Smiley. Technology. What was the toy in Steven's studio that to you was like, whoa?
Oh gosh, there's still some good lessons that I take away from seeing Steven in an incredible studio. But I'm such a visual learner when it comes to many things, whether it was school or just being able to incorporate things on the golf course that I can see versus kind of the concept of having to do something like do this, this, and this. It's like, well, no, let's put a stick out there and try to just fade it around the stick. Well, when it comes to the putting, I thought the visuals that he was able to create with the technology of, okay, so show me how far out this is, like, where would you play this? And now draw me where the golf balls would be to get into the hole. And then we're going to test to see what the line is to see if you're over or under reading putts. That's something that I still kind of work on now, and that left or righters are something that I've kind of struggled with in my career, and just a good lesson on how to be a little better with left or right putts. And you can learn about it in the video, but I definitely use some tools that he kind of talks about on how to be better at left or right putts.
This episode, this next piece of this episode is much better consumed on YouTube. It's more visual. You can, of course, listen to it on the podcast if you'd like to, but go to our YouTube to watch that full thing. There is a moment in this video that is going to blow your mind as it relates to just Smiley's skill as a putter. I want you to comment. Either you're watching this tomorrow, Thursday on YouTube, drop us a comment when you see that moment, or on the podcast, come over and check it out. It blew my mind. It blew Steven's mind. It's really, really cool to see a measuring of Smiley's putting in that way. So look forward to that. Hope you enjoy this video and this conversation with Stephen Sweeney at his putting studio down in Florida. All right, we're here in Jupiter, Florida at Stephen Sweeney's putting studio, surrounded by lots of fancy tech that I hope neither of us break in the short term, Smiley. And what do we got on deck for today?
Well, we have fantastic technology. I'm going to get underneath the hood and see what's good, what's working, what isn't. And then we're going to let you get under the hood and see if we need to get a whole new car. I think that's kind of what we're here to see today. We got one of the best in the world here to take a peek.
That's right. There's nobody better than Stephen Sweeney to take a look, because Stephen instructs players on tour, Colin Morikawa, Shane Lowry, Akshay Bhatia, young up-and-comers like Michael Thorbjørnsen, Blades Brown. I'm forgetting a bunch of other names, but the point is that Stephen teaches the best, and now he can add two more names to that list today, Smiley Kaufman and Charlie Hume. So, I mean, that list is going to keep growing.
Well, there's a chance that he might walk out with either a broomstick putter like Akshay, the two ball like we saw Shane Lowry use forever, or maybe even a saw grip that Colin Morikawa has. Who knows? This guy's a tinker.
Or the little kind of Scottish looking putter we have over here. Yeah. Steven, just give us like just an overview of what you hope to achieve with us today and what we're going to be kind of working on.
Yeah, so it's going to be obviously very much, Smiley's regarded as one of the better putters out there on the tour. great fundamentals. I want to see what he does. I'm going to maybe have a look at a little technical data, some green reading stuff. Maybe talk a little bit about some visuals that he looks at whenever he's putting. Obviously with you, Charlie, I have seen your putting stroke before.
Ricardo's one of the best amateur putters out there in and around the tour.
Here we go.
We're going to see what we can do and how we can make this as painless as possible for everyone.
Painless is good. Painless is good.
All right, what's up, guys? This is not normal. So this is quite the outfit I have on here. We're actually in some Gears 3D capture. I guess you can call it a uniform. It's not the most stylistic thing in the world, but I think what we're gonna try to accomplish is trying to figure out for me where my stroke's at, what I'm good at, and then how we can improve in some areas that I feel like when I get on the course, going away from just what a straight putt is and what looks good to my eye,
yeah,
and where I'm like, ah, man, I don't know what happens in situations like this. So I'm hoping that we can figure that out today. I know you're one of the best at what you do, so
appreciate
happy
it.
To get to work.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's going to be cool. I mean, a lot of the time when guys come in here, they're like, oh, well, this guy must be putting so bad. Sometimes the best lessons or the best data collections have been, you know, when someone's actually putting really well and they want to see what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's something we actually did earlier, you know, work with Michael Torbjornsson the day after he finished second at Sea Island back in the fall. Mm-hmm. And today he came in and was able to, like, you know, cross-reference where he's at now versus where he was at when he's putting great. So collecting data when you're actually putting really good, probably just as important as collecting it whenever you're putting bad.
Yeah, you know? I don't think I've ever really collected too much data on my putter. So I'm actually curious to see what I do well and any areas I can improve, really.
Perfect, let's go for it. So,
So just regular putts here?
We're on a flat putt, we're gonna start with that. Let you hit a few to sort of get comfortable with all the getup that you got on. I mean, pretty easy when you're as good as you, Smiley.
I've always been a good putter for the most part, ever since I was a kid. I, at times, was a little streaky on the PGA Tour. This is when I had a 36-inch putter. I'm down to, I would say, closer to 34 to 35. I'm not sure exactly what this is, but I've really worked hard on my lines over the years. At times, I tend to get kind of too open with my body, aimer gets too far to the right, and then left to righters, I kind of tend to struggle.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So kind of just to give you an idea, you know, obviously we get a lot of good players through here, and the thing that we're going to try and baseline everything off is on a flat putt to start with. So we've got a lot of your 3D stuff already captured here. We're going to look at it in a second.
Should I just go and make all five?
Let's go. Just make them all.
Okay. Kobe.
There we go. Love it. Alrighty. Alright, so we've got obviously your 3D data for your body and your club over here on the left. And we've got, you know, the regular 2D video, which I'm sure you've done a lot of work on in the past.
See how accurate this is, the biceps here. Let's just zoom in on this little guy. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Fully ripped there, Smiley.
You got to appreciate Gears making sure the mannequin looks absolutely yoked.
Exactly. You're statistically a very good putter. You know, for most of your career, made a lot of putts. So what we're kind of looking at is, you know, what exactly is the body doing? What's the club doing? And you kind of mentioned you worked on your lines a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of see here, when we look at that over the top view, you can see really good lines with your setup, much as you can here in kind of the video as well. The reason that I use this is I'm not able to see, you know, half a degree here and there.
Yeah.
Whereas this can, you know, I'm still really using this, but this is kind of giving me like a CT scan, mm-hmm, as to what's going on. And your listeners are obviously fairly avid golfers and pretty knowledgeable. The hole is only about 1 degree of error at 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impossible for me to see 1 degree with the eyes. So we use this. You display a lot of the really great tendencies of great putters. Your aim, this is incredible. You're 7/100ths of a degree closed with your putter face at aim.
I gotta get better. Gotta keep working at it. That's what you're saying.
So this is just about as good as it gets. So we know that you're in the perfect posture and your putter is the right fitted putter for good. What you see.
Yeah.
Okay. So these are things, you know, you've obviously kind of changed putter recently.
Yeah.
And it's something it's perfect for you setup wise. As you move through the stroke, we get that face moving along the arc, top of the backswing. You know, you're fairly low face rotation guy, I would say. You know, it opens about 4 degrees to the putt. Mm-hmm. Have you always kind of used that face mallet, face bounced?
When I was on the PGA Tour, I used a blade
putter,
and I tended to feel like I would try to open the toe. I used to always watch Tiger Woods do that gate drill with his right hand. And so when you had a blade, you would really feel the toe open and close.
Yes.
And so I had that feeling with the blade, and I think I got a little too inconsistent inside of 8 feet with the just general timing of that.
Yeah.
So I went to a mallet and started working my lines more, and then started to feel like every day it kind of started to look more the same, and I could just focus on just general body rotation. That makes sense.
That's something that's pretty interesting, is a lot of players, me included, you know, growing up watching Tiger, especially listening to him and talking about, you know, how he used to really release the putter and release the toe and stuff. And I keep this putter as my teaching putter, because it's about as, you know, little low tech as you can get. And it's one of those where I find it really easy to explain stroke mechanics with something like this. Mm-hmm. So whenever...
Because you see the toe opening and closing a ton, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So like whenever I set up and I just de-loft the putter, mm-hmm. I haven't actually rotated it, the toe goes behind the heel.
Yeah.
And then when I re-loft it, mm-hmm. it squares up. And when I add loft it, the toe passes the heel.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have misinterpreted what Tiger's like feel was.
Yeah.
Is that... With the great putters, we never, and when you watch Tiger do that one-handed drill, you never see him do this. You always saw him kind of de-loft, re-loft, ad-loft, which on a 2D camera sitting in front of him looked like the toe went behind the heel and then passed it. But a lot of people at home, I think, and a lot of tour pros we get through here, they actually think they're supposed to
open the face,
open and close it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what you're describing, is it maybe got a little too inconsistent?
Yeah, I would always battle it getting a little too outside.
Yeah.
So like just general disconnection right from the get-go was something that I felt like got off the most. So
yeah.
I would focus on just that the backswing, and that seemed to always clean up for me what I felt like was the through stroke.
Yeah, you can kind of see obviously a lot of the good work you've done here, especially as we start into that downswing. Something that we're measuring on gears, I kind of alluded to a little bit early in our conversation, this efficiency number. This is how much of your stroke is the face relative to the arc better than 1 degree.
Mm-hmm.
So that face currently is 5 degrees open to the hole,
okay,
but it's barely closed to your actual arc.
Mm-hmm.
And as you come through, really through impact, you can see how that just gets cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. So we started with your face aiming within 0.07 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
We're now half a degree at impact.
Yeah.
So that's gonna, relative to making a putt, that's actually about 20 feet away from the hole before you would miss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on a straight putt, no break, no spike marks, no wind, you're not going to miss inside 20 feet.
Yeah, I've always been a good green reader too, and never have done Aim Point Express.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the line, I use a line on my golf ball, and sometimes what my eyes see with the line of the golf ball maybe isn't what I read.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes like that skill of being able to line up a ball effectively is something that I don't work on as much as I used to, if that makes sense. And just like general perception of how, you know, a tenth of a degree or whatever percentage of a degree shifted one way or another, how that can screw you up as far as what you perceive straight is.
Sure, 100%. And it's something like everyone's eyes work a little bit differently.
Yeah.
So it's something that we kind of really need to keep an eye on here. for, you know, the as a baseline, really. You know, if you ever get off and you're able to come back in and see where you're at today, obviously your eyes being a little bit inside the ball.
That's where I like them too.
Where you see it best.
Yeah. I never am great when I'm right on top of it.
Yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people kind of struggle with, is they feel like they have to be on top of the ball. I see a lot of great players, you know, have their eyes inside the ball. Some have it definitely on top, and even some have it outside, just depending on where they see. You're a little bit ball forward, a little bit outside the eyes for sure. You know, that putter seems to work back on a really nice line, you know, right out of the center. And it's kind of tracking down your lines really nicely. So, you know, we've kind of collected some body data, some putter data, and we're looking at it visually. The last piece would be to see, is your ball launching properly?
Yeah.
Is it getting into forward roll properly? Mm-hmm. And how is that ball kind of coming off the putter? Is it coming off at the same speed and stuff like that as
gotcha.
Well?
Gotcha. How do you measure that?
So we're going to measure that by switching over to using the Quintic.
Put the putter in there behind it.
Yeah, perfect. So squared up against it, Smiley. Good. And that's the last part. It's the hardest part out of the way.
How often do you find when you do this part of the procedure of seeing how the ball is launching and figuring out, okay, all the mechanics of the putting stroke look good, and then the next thing you go to is, okay, maybe there's a degree too much or degree less as far as just general loft goes?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time, we wouldn't actually tell you what's going on before we gather everything. So probably 90% of the time, we would never let anybody in here see the data before we're done with it.
So there's a chance that you could, that you would see this and immediately be like, okay, he's launching it too much into the ground, like it's not getting a proper
roll. Yeah, exactly. So the first thing is when they come in, we loft and lie their putter. We measure it, we swing weight it, we get total weight. And that's like, so I know when somebody walks in here, there's like 4.5 degrees in this thing. Like this is probably going to launch high.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So we're going to just put these dots facing the camera on this ball here for you.
Okay.
That's all right. Let's go right here.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Very nice.
Yeah, it's kind of nerve-wracking, like when you're trying to feel like, okay, don't hit your worst putt you've hit this year type of deal.
So I think one of the things that, you know, you'll kind of see as you're going through this whole process,
yep,
there's a lot of tech in this room,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, the answer isn't always a complicated one.
Yeah, which I'm sure guys sometimes are looking for that when they're looking for solutions, right?
Yeah. I think the big thing is you got to know, are you working with a player who wants to just hole more putts? Are you looking for someone that wants more information? Are you, you know?
I'm looking for both.
You're probably in the minority though.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
I have not done a chalk line since I've stopped playing full time, but for a long time, I should say. And then now, before my rounds, I'll get on a pencil.
Yep.
I was coached by James Seekman my entire career.
Yep.
And that pencil was just a great way to be able to see lines good. And it's helped me get off to faster starts with the putter. Ooh, that was terrible. Come on, work your way back. Dah!
All right, so we're kind of looking at, you know, how the club's delivered into the ball here and what the ball is actually, you know, doing for the most part.
Yep.
We're kind of, this is at 1,000 frames a second coming off. Really seeing what the launch angle is, what the forward spin is, everything like that, side spin. So that last one, you know, might not have been your best, but again, I'm just gonna show you the club face first.
Okay.
You're aiming this, you know, this is a section of over 6 putts.
Uh-huh.
Your average is still 0.3 of a degree off aim, so that's absolutely good. Perfect.
All right.
Your average at impact is 1/100th of a degree, so.
Okay, so.
We don't have face angle problems,
okay.
Right? Okay. You're hitting it out of the center every time. Your face rotation is amazing. So this is color coded. That blue is what we would expect a robot in the industry with like TaylorMade and Ping, Callaway to use. That's what a robot should achieve.
Okay.
Green is what we see at the top end of the PGA Tour. And orange might be a tendency. Red, there's a problem. Obviously, with your face, it's all green and blue. So incredible face control. Where we start to see a little bit of red creep in here is in this launch angle number.
Interesting.
So you're launching it closer to three. Quintic generally likes to see it between one and two.
Okay.
I am always very skeptical of what grass are you putting on most.
Mm.
If we're on bent, really firm bent greens, then this would be too high.
Yeah.
I think for Bermuda, certainly POA, this is fine.
I put on bent.
You're on bent?
Yeah.
So we might want to just reduce the loft on the putter a little bit because your attack angle is pretty good. It's orange, but it's very, very consistent as to what you're doing here. Okay. So really don't want to change that. The only thing here we kind of see is there's a little bit of side spin on the golf ball.
Which direction?
A little bit of hook spin.
Really?
It would be the better of the two that we'd want to see.
Okay.
Okay. But for the most part, you're creating a good amount of overspin. You're launching it a little bit on the high side, I would say.
Okay.
That would be the only thing that I'm seeing. But, you know, on average, when we look at your putter at setup and impact, again, we got a blue club face within a quarter of a degree. Just so everybody kind of gets an idea what that looks like. That's how far offline the ball is at 15 feet with a quarter of a degree.
Okay. Okay, so we're at a good starting spot.
So at 20 feet, we're not even touching the edge of the hole. So again, this would be a session where, you know, someone comes in, it's a tour player. A lot of people want to, you know, put their thumbprint on something and say, yeah, I did this. This is a session where I'd be very happy to say, hey, Smiley, you're in a great place right now. We're going to nudge down the loft in your putter, just maybe half a degree.
Okay.
We're going to save all this information. And, you know, if you're ever on the struggle bus, give me a shout because you should probably come back and see what you were doing when the numbers were perfect.
Right.
And then have a look at it as to when you're struggling.
I have a question when I see all this data.
Yeah.
So when you talk about how this launch angle is a little on the high side, and then you talked about attack angle and then the side spin.
Yeah.
When you see those numbers, and maybe you probably have to talk about them each first individually.
Yeah.
Where do you feel like your mind goes as far as what the tendency of a miss may be?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about a matchup and finding a matchup. So, you know, your path tends to work a little bit in to out.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume you are more comfortable on a right to left than a left to right.
Very much so.
So when we see guys that have their path kind of shift a little to the right, it's obviously going to create a little bit of hook spin.
I push a lot of left to right putts.
Yes. So if your face follows the path or follows the arc that you're swinging the putter on, then that face would be open relative to where you may be aimed.
Okay.
And a lot of that's then down to, you know, just not feeling comfortable. And if you read a 2%, let's say right to left, and you make it, and you read the 2% left to right, well, from behind it probably looks the same. But when you get over it, you probably don't feel comfortable and you keep moving higher and higher.
I always have to keep going this way. I keep shifting left, and that's where I always feel like I have to aim further left than I want to with my golf ball.
Yeah.
So I can try to just
give yourself sort of more room and more space for it to break in.
Yeah.
And that's one of the common things that, you know, when I was talking to Charlie before we started, I would say 90% of what I teach is not how to move the putter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to get baselines and see where people are. 90% is what is your setup doing? Where is that physically pushing your aim?
Mm-hmm.
Is that causing path or arc issues? But then, you know, moving the green or getting outside and actually helping you, you know, on left to right putts.
Yeah.
That more like a hands-on style.
But you can do that here too.
We can move the green. So
that's
if
sweet.
You want to hit some left to right putts,
I'd love to.
We're going to do that right now. 2% left to right. So obviously, if you want to kind of read that, it's a left to righter. This would be kind of more the question now. In a real life situation, how do you read a putt? Do you read it up by the hole? Do you read it, you know, back?
I start from behind the hole. That's kind of where I build my read from.
Okay.
To start seeing the arc from the other side. What is it doing at the hole?
Yeah.
Work my way to the low side. Kind of see if I can get a gauge of what I feel like the slope is.
Yeah.
Just that knowledge of just knowing what it is without being able to explain it, I guess.
And then
getting behind here, and then I'm able to just, I can draw the arc and just feel what that slope is and where that apex of the putt is. So
one of the things I like to test guys on is, you know, obviously we know this is a 2%er, but if you're not an aim point guy, then that doesn't really mean anything, okay? So I'm assuming, see a curve more than a straight line?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Go ahead and hit a couple more for me, please. Shut it down. The whole thing?
Oh, that's drippy.
He's got his left to righters down already. So a really good drill, Smiley, that a lot of your listeners, a lot of the people that, you know, like to practice at home and stuff, if they don't see a straight line, if they see a curve, I like to test guys' reads by having them place the balls on the curve they see.
Mm-hmm.
So if we kind of give you, you know, roughly three to four different golf balls along your line, I want you to do the work and put them out where you think they would be. I'm just going to turn off the lights here a little bit. You think you're perfect?
Like for relative to, this is drip speed, right? Like this is me just barely getting it there.
Yeah.
This is like my fast greens. I'm taking more of a high line. I wouldn't be any higher than this.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, obviously just so people understand the difference, this is aim point.
Okay.
And
my line's right on that.
Here's ideal putt.
Yeah.
So you're on that high side, drippy side of the putt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that, you know, as a left, if you're on these left to right putts, getting those balls out there. And then, you know, I like to put a little, one of those little flat ball markers just underneath it and see if
you'll put it on the
low side.
Oh, okay.
And just see, take the balls away. And see if I actually can just hit it a little bit. I'm always trying to miss high if possible, right?
Gotcha, yeah.
You know, you're not giving me much to work with here because this is pretty much better than I've ever seen anybody set this drill up, okay?
Well, there you go.
So
for me, I still get over here and I just try to focus on speed and then just being able to get into like what my square feels like.
Yes.
So I get in here. But then I start fighting looking at the hole.
Yes.
So I get here and then my eyes start to go here, right of the line.
Yeah.
And then I'm constantly trying to figure out, oh crap, I'm over the line's this far left.
Yeah.
And I just kind of get stuck in this no man's land of do I need to push or pull this putt to make it?
Yeah.
Especially when I get outside of eight feet.
Sure. Sure. That's one of the things, you know, like a lot of great putters have read their putts from over the ball. Probably one of the best putters I've ever worked with was Alex Noren.
Yeah.
And Alex's best read was always in a setup position.
Mm.
So he'd get the general read from behind and he'd kind of put a line down, but then he'd really dial in his entire read from over the ball.
Right.
And I think for great players like yourself, you really need to understand the process of where do you get the best read. And then obviously from that, you know, you might actually be better at finding something closer to you that you can aim at.
Almost like drawing the line and kind of working your way up.
Yes. Like that first, like that first ball.
Yes. Like, all right, where's the hole, right?
Yeah. So if we had you just aim at that first ball and kind of keep things a little bit tighter, closer together for you so that you can set up your entire, you know, your square, your lines
feel better.
That. And now go ahead and just hit a putt, trying to hit that first ball. Perfect. So that's then picking a spot right in front of you along that curve. I think it's going to give you a little bit more consistency and a little bit better feel and seeing that left to right a bit better, rather than letting you look way out there at the hole and starting to get low maybe on where you're aiming.
Okay, so you go a little more that way, okay.
And then when you come back down the line, make sure that you find that spot. Beautiful.
Yeah. When I putted my best, my eyes don't spend a whole lot of time once I get back here staring.
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of locks me up a little bit. And if anything, I would rather my eyes be so quiet that it's almost like I'm not even noticing anything. I just want to be in this space to be able to focus on speed, really.
Yeah. It's something that with like Shane Lowry, we've noticed that when he's putted his best and then maybe when he's struggled, the time that when his eyes come back to the ball, when he putts really good, he almost doesn't even see the putter go back.
Yeah.
They like almost just see the glance of the ball and the putter starts moving because he's still so connected to the actual target. Mm. I would say for you, the only, you know, sort of you talking me through your tendencies, I would just say when you're coming back down the line, make sure you've got this reference point of where you actually want to start. And once your eyes are back as far as here, then you can actually just go ahead and pull the trigger and you're not going to get stuck over the ball. A little bit more speed and you got
it. I've always felt like when I get here and I'm lining it up and I get my spot, I feel like I'm square. My first look is at the hole, but it's honestly like, I wonder if I'd be better off trying to find something here, like you're saying, but I don't want to lose my picture of where the hole is.
Correct, yeah. So
I guess that's kind of where I get lost, is this spot here, how important it is to me to know what straight is and not to get me locked up.
Yeah, so if I take obviously away the aim point line, we've only got a curve now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically your eyes have to see that curve, and yes, the hole has to be relative for speed. I mean, that's a great putt.
So that drill you were talking about, when you put all the golf balls out like this, you would just put little
dots just below it. I'm a big believer that when you practice this enough and you actually have the visual, when you get to the golf course, it'll look better. So if we now kind of make this a little bit more realistic to the golf course, I'm just going to put a white dot here and take away the laser.
I'm curious to see how I do now.
Now we've just got your spot out there. You're going to still keep the picture of the perfect speed, but we're just going to make sure that we don't start the ball towards the hole. We still start it towards the spot that we picked. So you hit it right over that dot.
Did I?
Yeah.
Go!
Just right over it.
I kind of lost picture of it at the end, but I felt like I was really square to it in the beginning.
Yeah.
So you were almost like the beginning part is where I really need to be. Like right when I set up, I kind of get that spot, and then I kind of get more in that picture mode.
Absolutely. It's right over the left edge of it.
Yeah, just a little firm. So if I want to take a little more aggressive line,
you would be,
I'm going to be on the more on the right edge of it.
Splitting the right edge of it, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That was a good putt.
That was really good. Really, really good. I think that was a little, maybe you moved that a little too far.
Too far right?
Yeah, you're like, you went from starting it at 0 degrees up, see here? Tells you relative to the actual perfect line. You were at 0-0, and now you're starting at like 2 degrees right of perfect.
Well, we have found my area of struggle. Cash.
I think it's really important as well, you know, you can see now why, you know, you were 100% make on straight putts. Why does the tour go down to about 35% at 13 feet when you add in some break?
Yes.
And it's one of those things I always talk to my players about, strokes gained. This metric, it's awesome to evaluate your putting over the course of a season. Mm-hmm. But over the course of a day, it's almost worthless information, because if I hit it to 13 feet every day, 18 holes in a row, well, if I'm putting across a 4% slope,
yeah,
I'm not going to make very many, but I'm going to lose a lot of strokes.
Yeah.
Whereas if I hit it to 13 feet and I'm below the pin putting straight uphill all day, I'm going to shoot 59. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So based on where you're hitting it relative to the pin, it's really important to understand, like, if you had a great ball striking day, you know, a lot of the time you're pin high, and a lot of the time with like classic green designs, that means you're actually putting across the most slope. Mm-hmm. So obviously it doesn't always work out like that, but the guys who miss a lot of greens, they get to chip up there and they probably aren't leaving themselves 7 feet above the hole, breaking left to right downhill.
He's talking to me, but he's actually talking to me. That is me to a T. Give me that 8-footer up the hill for par. Let's jump up those putting stats. And hey, if we're going to lead anything in the tour, it's just going to be putts per round. That was something I'd absolutely nailed, because I would hit X amount of greens and chip and putt it good.
But that's obviously, it's very relative to the top ball strikers. Right. And
you get, it makes sense, though.
You get someone like Denny McCarthy, the one that year where his ball striking numbers really improved. His putting went from, relatively from one to maybe outside the top 10. Mm-hmm. And, it was a lot easier to be number one strokes game putting when maybe you're doing a lot more chipping and putting
makes
for par.
All right. Well, I think...
we got some left to right sort of work to do on your reading.
Yeah. Takeaway for me is that I'm very happy that just overall stroke-wise, the lines, there wasn't anything to your eye immediately that you said, okay, we need to get your right arm higher, you need to get the ball forward. There seems to be a lot of really good things with my putter, which I always felt like technique-wise, fundamentals were going to be pretty tight.
Yeah.
The hardest thing for me to figure out, I think for a lot of maybe even good putters, they don't understand why sometimes when it comes to putts they struggle with. So if anything I learned today, that I need to create better visuals for me. I clearly can putt well on an uphill flat putt or whatever you want to call it, that my stroke is good enough, but I need to work harder on what my line is and trying to create that proper gates, I think you would call it.
Exactly.
And then hit more greens. We didn't really get into that, kind of got it at the end, but hit more greens so then I can have these hoop putts from 10 to 15 feet.
There you go.
For birdie. Instead of par. That's right. I appreciate
awesome
it.
Awesome having you in, Smiley.
Thank you, man.
Anytime.
Appreciate it.
All right, Steven, you've completed the professional portion of this lesson, and I've got some bad news for you, okay? I am the worst case scenario putter tinkerer, every bad habit that goes along with putting. I can't settle on a type of stroke. I can't settle on anything specific or consistent in the game. The good news is you got a lot of mid-handicap amateurs out there that are in the same exact boat.
Yeah.
So now we're going to work going from pros to amateurs. What changes in terms of your approach when you're instructing?
Yeah, so obviously, like you kind of alluded to it, where amateurs actually feel like a little different when they walk in here, because they know that the space is generally reserved for the tour pro.
a lot of fancy tech in here, Steven. I'm a little uncomfortable right now.
There is a lot of tech in here.
Yeah.
But I think what will happen is when you spend more time in here and you kind of see what we're going to do, A, it relates the same as it does to the tour pro. We kind of follow the same process. Maybe, we kind of dumb it down just a little bit.
A little bit more than
just
a little bit.
But a lot of the tech that we use and a lot of the data we capture, we don't necessarily I'd say show that or explain that to the player, because we really want them to be sort of staying in the moment of using their craft to get the ball in the hole, and just giving them the absolute necessary pieces of information. So it's going to be pretty similar.
Okay.
One of the things that we're going to do is we've labeled up your putter with these little reflective markers on them.
Oh, and I've already broken one.
That's the only one that could fall off. So that's okay. The rest of them we need to keep on there. It's good for the outtakes.
That's
so
breaking equipment.
These are going to be tracked by these 8 cameras around the room. These are infrared cameras. A lot of your viewers, listeners, probably have seen these on EA Sports games, like
video game capture.
Yes, yeah. Like a famous guy that makes a golf game every few years.
You've heard
of him.
This
is how they capture their swings.
Yeah.
So we're going to use the same tech that we did with Smiley, and we're going to capture your putting stroke. So we're going to get a 3D view of how that putter moves back and forward, where you're aiming it, where you're hitting the ball. We've obviously got the other video cameras that are actually going to just simply look at you in a 2D world. And then we're actually going to start moving around a little bit with the floor. Okay, so we're going to give you some different breaking putts. So really, we're going to test your stroke mechanics. We're going to give you some achievable drills that you want to practice with as far as stroke. And then really importantly, we're going to test speed and read, obviously to be a little bit more like the real world outside.
Yeah, I'd love it if every putt was a straight 12 footer. Be really
all,
nice.
Yeah, we all would.
That's
not
the case, right? Yeah.
So it's one of those things where from 8 feet, the best players in the world are only 51% successful on average. But yet whenever they come in here, we're hitting a 13-foot putt.
Yeah.
They generally almost never miss on the straight. So there is a huge difference between going from that straight putt to a breaking putt. So we're gonna find all where the skeletons are here.
Got the TGL plates moving around. Yeah. Okay, I like that.
Exactly. Exactly. So you wanna actually go ahead and start hitting some putts for me just to get a feel for the speed of the green. Speed of the putt. Obviously, it's a straight putt, so don't need to give you a read or anything on it.
I'd hope not. Oh, great. Just leave the first
almost
one short. That's really good. Yeah.
There should we go. Say for disclaimer, this is a 13 on the stimp meter, so
I'm just really being careful.
That was,
you know, that's
that was some
you don't want to race the first one past and then you're playing defense the rest of the time.
Okay, what tends to be your miss?
Yeah, so I think a couple there are things, two tendencies that I kind of noticed when using a line on the ball is that I aim for the right, that when I aim right of my target, it feels like it's straight.
Okay.
And if I aim left, like it feels like I'm open when I'm really actually aimed straight.
I gotcha.
And then I think just I've been working on a little bit just of like the tempo of the stroke.
Sure.
Recently, and I think that is at times where I can kind of get caught in between, where it either gets too quick or I, you know, feel like I'm, you know, it's kind of stopping and the momentum's lost a little bit. So just kind of trying to find the right back and through tempo on the putt is a struggle for me.
So you got a couple of different things going on, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, more than a couple of things, but those are the two that I'm willing to share with you right now. So.
there we go. Just needed
third
some therapy,
charm,
you know, just talk it out.
That's right. You guys got like a couch in here I can sit on, you know. And so right now, as I'm doing this, you're just gathering all this motion capture information right now.
I'm just gathering a bunch of data, letting you kind of hit a few putts and kind of really interested in seeing, you know, the different types of outcomes of the putt and what actually went on whenever you hit that putt mechanically through the stroke. So that's something that we're kind of trying to just capture as we go.
Yeah, that one's smashed.
There we go.
Okay.
So I know this is, you know, getting started maybe a little ahead of where we're trying to be, but just something I think a lot of your viewers, a lot of your listeners would really appreciate. Even on a straight putt, actually thinking about what speed do you want to make the putt really helps. So whenever I work with even the best players in the world, we want to make sure that they decide what's their entry speed going to be. So we number them sort of 1 through 4. So one would be a putt that just almost like Tiger's chip at Augusta that year, the Nike symbol stayed on the hole and then fell in.
Yeah.
Like that would be your one speed, like last roll, versus like a 4 speed would hit the back of the cup, jump up and then go in.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. 2 kind of just goes in at regular, you know, maybe foot pass speed, and 3 would go in quite firm, hit the back of the cup.
Sure.
And the reason that I like to talk about entry speed rather than distance by the hole is we're talking about making the putt, whereas if we're talking about distance past the hole, mentally, we're not thinking about actually the ball going in the hole. So I really like to talk about, you know, what entry speed do you want to choose? So if you're somebody that wants to die the ball in the hole, even on a straight putt, I want you to pay attention to, hey, am I holing this putt at the same speed every single time, even if it's just a straight putt? So I'm going to challenge you now just for three more putts before we look at all this data.
Sure.
To see, can you give me three putts that arrive at the hole at the same speed, even if they go in or don't go in, but just if they kind of get there around the same speed for me.
And do you want that to be a one or a two or three, just as long as they're all the same speed?
I'm going to leave it up to you, whatever you want to choose, okay? I mean, what is your preferred speed?
That's a great question. It's something I've never thought about, you know, and it's why it's an interesting exercise. My follow-up question to you was going to be on that front with pros is that obviously situationally you might want to, on a quick downhiller, have it be a one, right? Or, you know, if you're hitting a putt back up the hill, that maybe needs to be a three. I mean, does that vary, or is it more of like this guy likes to see this always go in at like a one or a two, so do that. Maybe another one of your guys likes it at a three or a four, always do that.
Yeah, you know, you get guys, I would use Daniel Berger as a good example.
Okay.
You know, maybe Colin, Shane Lowry. Those guys, I would say, tend to be a little bit more conservative on the speed, but then they actually read their putts for the higher line that it's going in at, you know, a really manageable speed. There are players out there, one that I don't teach and he's a great putter is Denny McCarthy.
Yeah.
Denny's big on hitting his putts pretty firm. You know, we play out at Medalist a lot, and when I see Denny practicing out there, he really practices with a lot of pretty firm speed, and he reads his putts for firm speed. A lot of great putters have used slightly firmer speed. I know someone like Brad Faxon would say, you know, when you see the ball go past the hole, it's easier to make it coming back because you already know the line. Okay, so I'm a big fan of, you know, kind of choosing two as a speed general, but you know, you get to Riviera or somewhere like Augusta, you get these downhill putts, you know, you're literally, they're trickling in on the last roll, whereas the uphills, you can be a little bit more aggressive with them for sure. But it's something that you need to decide on what you want to do before you hit the putt. It's really going to help then when we start hitting non-straight putts.
Yeah.
It'll help you be more consistent with your reads.
Okay, so I like that sort of that two-ish range.
See, that's perfect as a two. Maybe a one and a half.
Okay.
That's kind of where we want it. You know, that's like a one and a half.
Yeah.
So, you know, that might be the speed that you actually feel more comfortable at holing putts. But, you know, the philosophy around putting, understanding what you're trying to do, it's easier to do it if you actually have a clear picture of what you're trying to do. I always reference the Moneyball philosophy, you know, the movie with Brad Pitt and baseball. Yeah. So I always reference Moneyball, and I always reference, you know, like blackjack. You know, on 17, you're not supposed to hit on blackjack, okay? And there's a philosophy of how you're supposed to play it. Moneyball, you know, it's not about hitting the Hail Mary, okay? It's about, you know, getting on base and doing that over and over and over again. So if the best players in the world are only 51% successful on average from 8 feet, you know, when we get to 10, 15, 20 feet as an amateur player, everyone's trying to make the shot. They're trying to go for the Hail Mary. They're trying to have that like walk-off home run. Whereas a lot of amateur players would score better if they just assured that they two-putted from 20 feet.
Yeah.
And they got the ball right up beside the hole.
It's amazing, but you know, God forbid that you go two down autos to your buddy on the weekend for not making the 15-foot bomb.
So that's a perfect
that's two.
Two
right there, right?
That's a perfect two. Didn't hit the back wall of the cup. It didn't just barely trickle over. And that's kind of, you know, what we would read most putts for. Okay.
Great.
So if we have a look at these putts now that you hit.
Okay.
I kind of always leave these images on here up top. Cam Smith and Tiger Woods. This was Tiger in, I think, 97 or 98 at Isleworth doing the photo shoot for his book, How I Play Golf.
Yeah.
This is one of the images from it. This is Cam Smith pretty recently. and just, you know, 20 years apart, just how similar their posture was. And one of the things that I really like to look at is, you know, just for any amateur out there, the shaft angle and the forearm angle really matching each other. And the big thing for me is, you know, both their lower backs are pretty straight, but then their upper back is really curved over and really relaxed and letting their head really fall down. Like Tiger's face is almost parallel to the top of his putter. So, you know, a lot of people will remember Michelle Wee with that tabletop putting stance. You know, I always use the back of the neck and the head as a reference. I don't ever want to see players fully bent over.
Yeah.
But really from kind of the rib cage up, I like to see a lot of roundedness in the shoulders. And then, you know, that allows the arms to kind of hang freely. And then we fit the putter to that posture so that we can match up the shaft lines.
That's interesting because, like, I feel like a lot of just looking at my own video or you hear people things people say anecdotally, you know, that the roundedness doesn't necessarily look like an athletic posture.
Yeah.
But then you look at two of the greatest ever and it's like, well, that's exactly what they're doing right here.
100%.
And I think the other thing, too, is you hear a lot of people talk about how the eyes need to be directly over the ball. I mean, are you seeing those guys there or is it, I mean, it almost seems like they're a little bit behind it in a way.
Yeah, there's massive variance on where the eyes need to be. You know, there are certain people out there that say it has to be an inch inside, an inch behind.
Yeah.
You know, that's just simply not right because everyone's eyes are different. There's something called vernier acuity, which is the physiology of how your eyes work.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same as if we both went to get fitted for a pair of glasses. Your eyeglass strength and prescription might be different to mine. And I've seen players that can only line up a putter if their eyes are quite far inside the ball. And I've seen guys that actually have to have their eyes outside the ball to see a straight line. So everyone's a little different.
And depends on how you can see the straight lines. We're debunking myths here today.
Exactly.
Right? That's, don't feel like you have to do the eyes over the ball thing.
There is no sort of one size fits all with putting. This is really personalized and really individual. And what we'll actually kind of see with you is that when we look at your 3D data, so this is your putter face at setup. Wow. So this is a proprietary software that we have with Gears.
Wow.
That we've been able to develop for putting only. And it shows us where your club face is pointing at the moment of setup before you take it away.
Okay.
So whenever you swing the putter back, you know, you take it back and you start to get it opening a little bit maybe here.
Okay.
Relative to the line of play. Now, from there, you're really going to have to hold on and try and keep it square right up to impact here. You're about 3/4 of a degree closed on this particular putt. But you started, let's see, you know, 2+ degrees closed. So you kind of self-corrected.
Yeah.
And that would, you know, I generally try to find guys to, you know, aim closer to zero. So that's something we're going to look at with your posture. You can also see the amount of closure on the way through is about 6 degrees, which is what we generally see for this putt. But at the top of your backswing, you were only open 1.5 degrees.
So that's interesting. If I'm closing my face, but I'm telling you I'm aiming right, it feels like that's the compensation, right? Like I'm trying to kind of feel like the putter is aimed toward the hole, but in reality, my shoulders, my hips, and everything's aimed out to the right. And looking at this, and this is not, I promise this is not me as a putter, tinker, sicko, immediately going to the equipment, but is this something where, because we hear a lot about the very, you know, different, every putting stroke has different arc in it and things like that. Yeah. So do you immediately look at something like this and say, this person needs to be in this type of putter? Or are there a number of different factors that go into that beyond just what we're seeing here data-wise?
So, you know, without sort of giving the date the video shot on away, Isaiah Salunda, who just finished third in Mexico, the week of Torrey Pines, I had him meet me at Callaway HQ. He flew over from Vegas, and he'd been struggling with his putting. And we found out that with the sort of L-neck, crank hosel neck on his putter, he tended to struggle aiming it. So when we gave him the exact same putter, but with a short slant neck, it actually fixed his alignment. So all of these putters that you see at market, they're all tour inspired because a certain player wanted that and it kind of became popular so that maybe players might aim that one more right, more left. Different colors, lines, dots, all these things play a massive role in this. So a lot of the time, we by just maybe changing out the putter or the length, the lie, the loft sometimes, the color, we might change that alignment story. Now, when we look over here with your setup position, your eyes are a little bit inside the ball. And it does look like you're kind of turned a little bit out to the right. So you'll probably close the putter from there to not miss right.
Mm-hmm.
As we look through the stroke, pretty straight back, not a lot of arc to it. A little bit on the toe, which is when we look back here again, you can see a little bit on the toe hit here. So these, you know, this is sort of what we see in a 2D world. And this is giving me a little bit like a doctor taking a CAT scan or something, or a CT scan. It's really for me to see, okay, what exactly is going on there in, you know, small numbers that I can't see with my eyes.
Right, yeah, like we can look at this. This is the tool we've had for a number of years and say, that looks like a toe hit, but this is fascinating that like when we know exactly where this is on the putter phase and just how much of a toe hit it is.
Exactly. So we're going to do a little test here to try and help with your alignment. I think we're going to have to change your posture a little bit because you can see you kind of lose your posture and come up out of the putt a little bit as well.
That's now you're pulling all my demons out of me. That's the other thing I've done in the past. Is I'll do a little bit of this number while kind of rock, and then do a little bit of that action. So that when you're saying I'm coming up out of it, that's kind of what you're seeing there.
And that's related to your initial start posture. So if that's not in the right position, you're going to have to come out of it when you start moving. So we're going to do a little drill where I'm going to test how you see straight.
Okay.
And it's something that a lot of my players do as their first drill every morning to warm up, which is they get a chalk line or a string line. Mm-hmm. They put the balls down the line in a straight line, and then they literally just practice getting into the right position where they can see straight. So we got a little bit more sort of help in here where we've got a laser in the rim.
Okay. Laser I'm standing in front of.
That's okay. So about every 2 feet, we're going to put a golf ball out here.
Okay.
Now, whenever you go behind the golf balls, can you just check for me that you see them in a straight line?
They look straight to me,
Perfect, okay.
All right.
So I'm going to turn this off.
Okay.
I'm going to have you take your setup position.
Okay.
And I want you to aim your putter at this, basically as if this was the hole.
Okay, great. Okay.
Okay. So tell me when you feel good.
Yeah, that feels straight right there.
Now, do those three balls look like they're still in a straight line?
No, they do not.
Okay. So
Do
they look like they fade?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you take your posture again and now I stand out of the way, I'm assuming the putt goes from left to right like a fade putt.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why you're aiming left. You're seeing a fade. The start direction has to be left of target.
Yeah.
But unlike with a 7-iron or a driver, the ball will never come back on a putting green.
Okay.
So we have to get you into a position where you see straight from here, just like you did from back there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the putter away because I don't want this to influence your posture.
Okay.
And this is something that everyone at home can do. If you've got, you know, like a tiled floor or wooden floors, you get the balls and you put them down the straight line of the tiles, assuming, you know, they were laid properly in your house, and put them down, you know, every 2 feet for about 10, 12 feet, and then take your posture and see, do they look straight? So this time I want you to go ahead, just take your general putting posture, but no putter. And I want you to come way closer to the putt, to the ball. Now, when you look up, did it get worse or better? It
definitely got better, I think.
Okay.
Is that weird?
Yeah, no, that's
right.
Go way further away. They probably don't look straight anymore again.
They do not. Close to the ball, it feels like it's all,
Yeah, so you may have to get a little closer to it. There's a few things that really will affect this. It's your distance from the ball. It's the ball left and right between your feet. And it's a lot to do with your neck tilt, whether your neck's tilted right, left, up, or down. So someone like a Jordan Spieth, Mm-hmm. When we look at Jordan, you know, he generally never has his hat on straight. It's kind of always like tilted a little bit. And when he sets up to his putt, he kind of, you know, sets up pretty square with everything. And then he looks like he's almost like holding a cell phone under his right ear. And that's because that's where his eyes are going to see straight. I've never worked with Jordan, but I'm like knowing how the eyes work, that's how they, that's where someone sees straight from. So we need you to get into the position where these balls all look straight first before we introduce the putter. I would like you to get the ball a little further forward in your stance.
Okay, it's like there.
Obviously, you're a little bit maybe more eyes over the ball. Bend forward from the hip.
Okay.
Really let the shoulders round, everything, let the head, almost like you're giving yourself a double chin. Let it fall. And let's see if that looks better.
That definitely looks better than it did before.
So now, if we take the putter and keep that posture, you probably have to grip down the shaft a little bit.
Yes, I do.
Don't actually hit any putts yet, but just make sure that they all look straight before we do anything.
They definitely look straighter than they did before.
So we were over 2 degrees closed. We're now at 0.4 or something like that.
Wow.
So you can see down there, you're actually very in between open and closed right now. You're kind of right in that area.
Wow.
So your eyes are basically telling you where to aim the putter.
That's so interesting.
So this is a really simple drill that anyone can do at home. Like I said, with tiles on the floor or something, if you get a string line, take it to the golf course. And then what I do is I'm just gonna work a little bit on your grip. Just get these hands a little higher.
Okay.
But soften your elbows. Just relax.
Okay.
There you go. And all you're gonna do is hit the ball up and just touch it off the next ball. So just hit like a 2 foot putt. Beautiful. All right. Take this one out of the way. We're gonna do the same thing again. Roll it up. It's like a 5 foot putt.
Hands higher, but soft elbows. Okay.
High hands, soft elbows, and then just roll it up and touch the ball. Okay. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh, wow.
This could be the ultimate one take
here. I was going to say, man.
Very good. All right, last one to the hole.
Okay. Do they do Monday qualifiers in the Cognizant?
There we go. It was on this morning. We'll maybe get you a late entry in.
Okay, all right. Okay, that was...
Let's do that one more time.
Interesting.
So that was your old stroke, except we were aiming straight this time.
Yeah.
Your old stroke, we aimed left and pushed it. This time we aimed square. Let's just release it.
Just release the head.
The same way we did with the other ones. Just don't try and guide it. Let the putter go.
Wow.
Perfect speed as well. So this is a really simple drill that anyone can do. You put those balls out there. You roll up, you hit, you know, the first ball, the second. Because the ball's only about half the width of the hole.
Yeah.
So if we can hit the ball, we can definitely hit the hole.
Yeah.
And then finally, we'll finish off with maybe trying to make 5 in a row. Now we've kind of mastered the setup, the aim, and the straight putt. Challenge you to see how you can read a green.
All right, let's do it. We're gonna make a lot of money out there, boys. The boys at Hope Valley are in trouble, I'll tell you what. Whoa, do I need to get off it?
You can jump off, yeah.
Spooked me a little bit there. It's like when they pump up the chair of the dentist.
You know? Huh?
You're like, whoa, what's going on?
So now we've, you know, this is a really cool piece of tech that we use. One of my partners, Platform Golf.
Yeah.
So we can actually tilt this to any angle. We use percentage in golf.
Yeah.
So a lot of aim points getting a lot of stick at the moment, okay? We can teach aim point on this.
Okay.
Aim point definitively has helped a lot of people. It's being misused on the tour. The one thing I would say is that for any amateurs wanting to try it, really the only goal of aim point is to find the highest number percentage of break in the middle third of the putt. So that means if we're putting from here, the only place we're really interested in is starting about 4 feet away.
Okay.
And we're only looking for about an area of 4 feet, unless it's a double breaking putt. So this area is the only place that you should be stomping around with your feet. I mean, I'd probably ask Mark Sweeney, who's invented Aimpoint, but yeah. I would feel like 60% of guys, 70% of guys out there are doing it wrong. So anyone that's got their feet up by the hole, yeah. there's definitely no need for that. You know, once I pick my yeah. ball up, really the whole thing would take, you know, a amount of time of where I go, what's the read here? What's the read there? What's the read there? And I'm done.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then are you subsequently then, is your once you define the grade, you're going back and you're using a number for grade, right?
Yes, correct. So okay. I'm finding if it's a 2 or a 3, I'm holding up those fingers.
Yeah.
But essentially, yeah. with the amount of time that it takes, compared to a guy that's going to read his putt, go back there, walk around the other side of the yeah. hole, I know why it's getting a lot of bad press,
sure.
but it's actually getting bad press for the guys that are doing it incorrectly. Not for the guys. The guys that are doing it properly, A, they're not slow,
yeah.
and B, they're actually
doing
using way less footprints on the green to read their putt. I've now given you a random percentage of break here.
Sure.
I know what it is. You
okay.
don't. Okay. I'm going to have you read this putt for me.
Okay.
And I will preface this that about 90% of missed putts are due to read and speed. Only about 10% of missed putts are due to technical reasons. Okay, so I want you to go ahead and read this putt.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you a little sticker. And what I'd like you to do is put this sticker out by the hole with where you've read the putt.
I mean, that feels right to me. I don't know. I mean, that's about a cup.
Okay.
That might be too much.
Okay.
That feels okay. right to me.
All right, so what I want you to do is I want you to go ahead, hit this putt for me, you know, where you think is...
Okay.
Nice. I'm just going to turn off the light a little bit just so we can see this a little better, if that's
yeah.
okay with the
Absolutely.
Cameras.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's your spot that you picked. Let's see it.
Oh, did I hit that nearly hard enough? Let me get a little.
It started close
to
where you wanted
line,
to,
right?
Okay, so we're going to give you another go on this.
Okay, that was...
And just so everybody knows where you kind of read this.
Yeah.
It was roughly... 1, 2, 3-ish balls out.
God, but this feels like even if I hit it hard enough, it's going to be an underread.
Okay, well,
So let me hit this with proper pace.
Let's see.
Trying to get my newfound technique in place here. Wow, that's breaking a lot.
So
here's and I started that probably higher than my line, right?
You did start higher than your line.
Sheesh.
So here's something that everybody can learn at home. We were talking about making a straight putt here earlier and getting the posture right, getting the alignment right, and we were talking, you know, about 1-2 degrees. So to make that putt in the hole from the distance you're at, you had to be better than 1 degree of error. 1 degree is 10 feet, basically, is
yeah.
the edge of the hole. Now, when we read the putt here, or you read the putt, you gave it about 3 balls of break outside the hole. Now, if the camera looks at the green, I'm just going to show you actually where the true aim was.
Okay. No way. How on earth? So and just does that account for like a dying pace, or that's just like a normal
pretty standard pace. So if we kind of give you
wow.
the line, that's what that translates
yeah,
to.
Yeah, wow.
So I think something that a lot of people
so interesting.
Misinterpret is the highest point of this putt here is about probably here. So a lot of people talk about finding the apex of the putt and aiming there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we aim here, we've missed about 10 inches of break before
yeah.
it got there, okay? So that's why inevitably a lot of people miss putts low. So we've got almost 2 feet of break from 13 feet. So it's actually about 20 inches.
Right.
This runs at a 13 stem. Now when you see it, I want you to go ahead and try and hit one up there and see where it goes in. The high line is obviously the soft. The lowest line is the firmest. And the middle is kind of your ideal putt, okay? So I want you to go ahead and try and replicate this for us.
I didn't hit him in the face.
So we started that low.
That's so crazy.
So you had the right line,
still,
just not enough speed.
Not enough speed.
We started this one, if you look here, you had the direction, You were perfect.
Okay.
So we just need to increase the speed.
Increase
the
speed a little bit, all right.
And then we got it.
Oh.
Beautiful direction on that one.
Okay. He may not close the shop tonight, Steve. We're going to get this right.
I feel like this is it.
That's got to be it. Oh,
there we go. So as you can see here now, Charlie, there's a lot more to putting than just standing there hitting straight putts and trying to manipulate path and face and all these things. So, you know, one of the things that I kind of mentioned earlier, about 90% of the teaching that I do with any player, professional or amateur, on putting is not stroke mechanics related. I very much believe that the setup takes care of the direction and the putting stroke, and then the rest of it becomes, you know, a read and speed game. And it's obviously, as you saw yourself, it's a lot harder to make the same distance putt when we add in 2% of slope than it is on a straight putt. And that's, you know, that's sort of relative to the golf course.
Yeah.
The guys on tour are only about 33% successful from this distance.
So in terms of takeaways, right, for any amateur player, it feels like first thing you got to do is, using the drill that you illustrated, that straight line drill, is find the posture for you where you can see the straight putt.
Yes.
Right, because then you can eliminate the variables of, is my setup bad? Is my, you know, am I taking myself out of the game right out of the jump, right? And then past that, it feels like, you know, whether it's just finding different putts on a green where there's some slope, where there's not flat putts, you're just going to go out and practice. It's working on reading that middle section of the putt. And it feels like if you can combine those two things, that's kind of your basic formula for an amateur as to how they can improve at putting.
Exactly. So, you know, the higher you hit the putt, the slower it becomes as well. So it's one of the big things is, like, amateurs play the low line a lot.
Yeah.
And then they struggle with their speed control because the ball starts going downhill so early that they generally end up whacking it past the hole, especially when they get on fast greens. So, you know, this is all sort of tied together. Can we, you know, can we aim the putter from our good posture where we see straight? Can we start the ball within a degree of error, roughly, is all we're looking for? And then, really, can we have a read that's even makeable, then can we match our speed to all of that? As you kind of see, it's not that dissimilar than with the pros.
Yeah.
But it's something that little drills, like you can do at home or do it at the local putting green, there are things that make a huge difference to players that just want to get a little bit better and have less three putts and make a couple extras every now and again.
I love that. I mean, I think my takeaways are, we worked on some setup stuff, that straight line putt, but just thinking about that pace too.
Yeah.
What's number do we want to make that putt at? You know, what do we want to see it kind of entering the hole? And for me, like, really focusing on, like, what a 1.5-2 looks like.
Yes.
Is pretty key. You
exactly.
know, and then I think that informs how you read the putt. You know, to your point here, it's like we're looking at these lines, right? And it's like 1.5-2 probably somewhere in here, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to try to hit a 3 or a 4 down here because that's not going to feel comfortable.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
It's good stuff.
If in doubt, pick the high line, dye it in, you'll be a lot closer to the hole after it's all over.
I think we solved all my problems, guys. Like, we're all the way fixed. And we're going to look for a money qualifier somewhere soon. And
Puerto Rico.
See you there. Get me on the next charter.
There we go.
Any final thoughts, Steven, you want to leave the good people with? Or we've got it fixed. We're ready to roll.
I think we're in a good spot. And it was an absolute pleasure having you in. Really enjoyed it, as always, hanging out.
Loved it.
And obviously, you're welcome back anytime.
I love that. Anytime you need someone to hit a flat 13-footer.
There you go. You're the man.
You got the guy. You got the guy.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the